everybody. Welcome back to Flareheads. Today we're going to continue our conversation with Ken Stapleton, picking up where we left off last time. If you remember, we talked about place brands, Miami's gold rush, and the movement of all these companies and these exciting things happening in Miami. And we talked about attitude and creating places where people want to be and just how individual people's preferences are. So we're going to talk more about that today. And we're going to talk about lifestyles and affordable lifestyles, how it's not just about housing, but the overall lifestyle and how those lifestyle choices are very individual, down from person to person. We're going to talk about, again, more about creating places for people. We're going to continue this conversation about how Miami is growing up, and then start talking about even Latin America and the continued developments in the news coming out of there and what it means for Miami. So thanks for joining us. So we'll jump right in.
And I think that's part of what we try to uncover, which is, you know, if going back to the data question, if you only look at the data and what I call kind of by mixing up all the different submarkets, when you get the average, it says no. But that's not how it works. If you're going after a niche market, a particular target market, and that's a fit for that market, then the finances work. Right. The numbers run, right? The problem is the traditional analytics mesh everything together. And we deal with this in safety a lot. I always tell my clients, I want you to split out any responses, survey responses from women, because they're different than the men. And when you blend them together, you get nothing. You get zero insight, right? If you're trying to build a particular kind of niche lifestyle choice, understand, and you have to dive into, you know, whether it's the, you know, all the variety of things that are out there in terms of the analytics right now. If you're picking one of those subgroups, find the subgroup that idea fits and figure out how many of them are and how many of them still want to have the lifestyle you want to provide. Traditional analytics typically don't do that. Even the best housing analysts in the country that I've worked with sometimes don't get it. But I always argue that there's something in there. You just have to be persistent enough to tease it out. But a lot of times we're just looking at these blended numbers, I call them, and they tell us nothing.
Right. And so as people start looking for, you know, that affordable lifestyle, not necessarily housing, but it's what are you doing as we're back in another stage of, what do you call it, irrational exuberance?
Yeah.
This just Miami on fire, and the question in the paper, is it too much? Right. And it's things that cities around, that the ring cities around Nashville are dealing with. There's a growth that's kind of imposing itself on their communities.
Right.
Rather than picking an issue to try and figure out, thinking that you're going to solve one problem when it's part of, like housing, it's really lifestyle.
Right.
And everyone's definition of it. And you can't apply 35% of income to an affordable lifestyle. Depends on what that lifestyle and that personal preference is.
Absolutely.
And it's just like me. If I want to live in a place, I'm not necessarily housing cost burden if I'm spending 60% of my income. If I'm making an affirmative choice, lifestyle choice to do so. When I have an option, but I want to live by the beach,
right.
And I'll pay up to live by the beach.
That's right.
That doesn't make me housing cost burdened.
Because it's a choice.
Right. And so to me, the place to start in a place like Miami or Nashville or these places that are experiencing this, that overall are becoming this place people want to be.
Right.
So Chicago versus Miami.
Yeah.
Texas versus Chicago, with Caterpillar going to Irving. At that level, Miami, West Palm, also with a lot of the financial stuff, these are the places people want to be rather than be in Chicago, rather than be in New York. And it's not so much population exodus. This is the other debate, because a lot of those communities are saying, no, it's not net population loss. No, but it's all your wealth that's leaving. And so there's a place that the money wants to put it that way. This is the place the money wants to be. It also leads us into the last one, which is Latin America.
Yes.
But to make it sustainable and to deal with sort of those growth issues that we're talking about, it's going to be a natural thing. We got to address affordable housing if all these people are coming and driving prices up. You got to step back, though. And I like the affordable lifestyle, but it's just like the musicians in Key West. Okay, now that South Florida is this place that people want to be, to really deal with those growth-related issues, you got to get down into the neighborhoods. This is where cities, redevelopment agencies, and things come in. Because and in Key West, the musicians, I just go back to that because it's just so comfortable subject. But Duval Street and the rest of Key West is at that micro level, at that local level, you've created a place people want to be. And more important than that, you've created a place people want to stay, where they want to remain. And so
it's almost like a monopoly. Each unique place like that has a monopoly up for a certain target market.
Right. And so if you look at places that, you know, and when you're thinking about resisting gentrification, you look at places, the West Grove, South Beach. But when you go and look at the numbers, you see that people are still there also. You see that they're not Aspen, which when you run an income chart on Aspen, it's up here. In these places, it's like this. You know, you've got both ends. And so even you've got legacy residents and people in these communities who, because there are places they want to stay, because there are places people want to come to and stay, some people figure out a way to do so. Now, it's a struggle, and that's but I think it's how you get more focused in your policies and in how you use your resources, rather than, well, we got to fix housing. No, we need to address how do we retain the legacy residents in their homes or whatever those issues are. But I think that the first piece, and it's just like talking about Opa-locka or wherever, is it's that look and feel. It's that gut check. It's make it a place people want to be, and they'll figure out
desirability. And you know, and for Florida particularly, I think it's how welcome do I feel here. But there's a lot of different attributes. But again, if you go back to the pyramid of needs, you know, safety is really important on there, and it's something that we almost subconsciously deal with all the time. But as you were talking, I was like, you know what? I mean, we talk about this lifestyle choice. How many people in big cities, like in big cities with good transit, DC, New York, Chicago to a degree, are more than happy with a lifestyle where they don't own a car? That's something we don't think about here in Miami right now.
Right,
because unless you're living in Brickell and working in Brickell, or living downtown and working downtown, more and more with Brightline, we're getting a few better choices on that. But really, Brightline only goes to two downtowns right now.
Right.
West Palm and Miami. Yeah. Right. And Tri-Rail only goes to one downtown right now. Right. West Palm, which is kind of a downtown. Yeah, it's all right.
We'll take it.
But we're talking about this migration of people, right, coming in. And this migration is not just high earners from other places, right? Because these companies that are coming need their support staff. They need, you know, the other folks. And those folks have been living that more urban lifestyle, whether it's in Philly or New York or Chicago or whatever. And so they're not used to having to pay for a car and the insurance. And the insurance here is horrible in terms of how expensive it is, right?
Right.
That affordable lifestyle, when you add in the transportation costs, gets way out of whack here. Like, it is super out of whack here. And all we talk about is 35% of income for your rent. And I'm like, we can't think about it that way anymore. And so the other options that we're creating and those lifestyle choices, which is it's what I'll call a transit urban lifestyle that exists in other places in this country, not just in Europe, not just in South America or in Asia, right? But it does exist in this country. It's just not predominant yet. Miami is about to grow up into that, into offering that lifestyle, and places that have the fundamentals in place already are going to become very attractive if they get their act together.
So those fundamentals, I think, is that's one of the other things that I wrote down here, is I made a note going back to Miami Beach. Mm-hmm. And now Miami is as you start having this excitement and all these people wanting to come, and you're right, it's not just the rich people. It's everyone sees this news and sees that, okay, this is a place where stuff's going to be happening.
Right.
Whether I'm an entrepreneur, whether I'm talent, whether I'm just someone that wants to be around other people where something really cool and exciting is happening, that's down here. But how do you maintain it? Because that's what South Beach used to be. And the rest of South Florida hadn't caught up with it. And it was South Beach. And over time, things started happening. And for a number of reasons. A lot of it had just to do with, you know, entrepreneurial vision in these other places and people seeing the value that maybe other people had not seen in some of these other neighborhoods, whether it's Wynwood or Design District or now Little Haiti and Little River and stuff. But it also has to do with, you know, a place like Miami Beach, you know, getting complacent and not paying attention to what it needed to do to stay on top and to stay that place. And it makes me think of, and I thought about this because I saw something on LinkedIn about some financial companies moving to Pinellas County in the St. Pete area. And talking about this movement from other states in Florida. And it's not just to Miami and West Palm, even though we started it. And that's kind of the main headlines. And I remember being in front of the Florida cabinet with Miami Beach Mayor David Dermer. And the city was having a fight with the city of Miami at the time. This is close, maybe 20 years ago. And I remember going with the mayor up there. And I remember how angry the Miami city manager was at the meeting. So much so that the governor commented. Actually, the governor asked him if he got that angry at his own commission meetings. This was Governor Bush. And they called Miami Beach jealous about all the good things happening in the city of Miami. And I thought about it when I saw the St. Pete article, because I think it's great what's happening over in Pinellas, but you know, it was obviously self-promotional. And I thought, well, there's reasons for this. There's reasons that Miami is where it is now. And a lot of it does have to do with South Beach. And there's a reason South Beach is where it is now, trying to catch back up and kind of a little bit eclipsed now with what's happening with corporate relocations and what the city's trying to do in Miami Beach to make itself more of a feasible place for corporations to be there with the office space and stuff. And there's other lessons we could talk about with that. Right. But what I remember is Mayor Dermer, when he got back up to speak at the cabinet after all of this, commenting on that we're not a jealous city in Miami Beach, not jealous of Miami, and that we're very proud that we in Miami Beach, and with all of the good economic development we had done there, were able to serve as that catalyst that then allowed Miami to experience that type of success. And so I thought about that when I was reading this now. I thought, okay, what started off really as much in West Palm as Miami in terms of targeting financial sector, you know, but that's really what's been driving it, is now extending beyond just South Florida and has created this statewide movement, or has anchored. There's other things. I mean, obviously, the governor's out there, and there's a lot of different messaging being out there about the attitude that we talked about, that it's not just a Miami attitude, that it is in Florida. But it is Miami, it is South Florida that's anchored this migration of these financial companies to now not just South Florida, but other places.
You know, as you were talking about that, a thought went through my head that I don't think I've had before, which is, when we think about remote work, we always think about, you know, the tech people, or, you know, even us or whatever, you know, the people that are out there, you know, rolling up their sleeves, getting the work done kind of thing. But the truth is, the CEOs invented remote work. And they're realizing out of the pandemic, well, you know what? If I could do remote work and manage my team from Chicago, I sure as hell can do it from Palm Beach. I sure as hell can do it from Miami, where it's a lot different in January than it is in Chicago or New York or whatever else it is. Culturally, Miami still has to catch up, but I think the other fundamentals are there, that the leadership, the corporate leadership and the business leadership is seeing and beginning to realize they can take advantage of, not just their remote workers taking advantage of it, but they themselves are taking advantage of it. And I think we see that in West Palm and Palm Beach. Palm Beach prices are going crazy. We're seeing it in Martin County. I would guess we're seeing it in Pinellas as well, and certainly in Naples and places like that, where that remote working isn't about the CEO sitting in the headquarters and everybody else being spread around the country. You know, the headquarters in New York or the headquarters in Chicago, the CEO's remote working as well. And in some cases just decides, well, you know what? I mean, you know, everybody's so remote, I like being there instead. So that's what I'm going to do. And so you're seeing these stories in there. And even, you know, the latest story about Ken Griffin. You know, they just took over the top floor of the former Neiman Marcus on Worth Avenue. But he's not going to work there.
Right.
He's going to work in Miami, right? Because that's the big city. And the players have to be in the big cities because that's where the other players are, right? And so there's this really interesting distributed work model that's going on that isn't just... It includes the CEOs, and I think we're in a whole new era of what this is going to look like. But it still comes back to, what's the quality of place? What's the lifestyle choice at all income levels? And how do you really get after that? Because the talent is absolutely, for the foreseeable future, the talent shortage is going to be the key ingredient in every equation.
Because even for the CEOs, when we talk about quality of place, CEOs were already working remotely. They were working remotely forever from Naples.
Right.
From Jupiter Island.
Yes.
From these places, and quality of place. But now, even for them, it's that whole dynamic has changed.
And part of that is the kind of what you call the attitude, you know, what I'll call the culture of public service provision. And how that's being managed in a lot of other cities, and not very well, and where they're really truly struggling, where their public revenue systems rely on a bunch of people coming into their downtowns on a regular basis and then being able to tax that income. We're seeing that in lots of other places. And so this has really upset the apple cart in a lot of ways. Beyond just people not wanting to you know, travel during rush hour, it's actually impacting systems in big ways that are kind of the precursor to some of these big business moves.
Right.
And the fact that, you know, nationally there are probably a dozen major downtowns that are struggling with real and perceived safety in ways that they haven't in 20 years. Is really significant. And it was surprising to me. I'll be perfectly honest with you. When I first saw it in Minneapolis, I was like, no, what? Say that again? People don't want to come downtown because they're afraid? I haven't heard that in forever.
Right.
Right? And we're back to that. And a lot of things came together to make that happen. But what's happened is we've forgotten how to deal with it. And now it's impacting business decisions.
Right.
Right? Like Starbucks, like the corporate HQ moves, and we're not finished, I guarantee you. I mean, you know, Target in downtown Minneapolis is making some really interesting decisions these days. And so that whole migration of talent to, you know, places where both the lifestyle and the government perspective or attitude towards businesses, it's really driving some decisions that we hadn't really seen in a long time. And we had the whole big exercise with Amazon HQ2, right? And so some of that uncovered what was already in the mix, but almost we didn't talk about it. And now it's just like it's full on. One of the biggest challenges these cities are having is what's happening on their transit systems. People don't feel safe using their transit right now, and they don't know how to fix it. I do, but they don't. So we're going to try and help them. We're going to try and help them do that. And we'll try and help here in Miami, too, because we got a few opportunities to do it here. So we'll see.
Yeah.
But let's go back to. I think the bigger question about, you know, this golden era for Miami and South Florida, and if it's real or if it's just the next bubble, which I think is part of, you know, the debate that's kind of going on right now. And people are worried about, you know, if we hit a recession and are we going to have people upside down on properties again and all that fun stuff. I think the prices have gotten crazy. I mean, I look at my own neighborhood and I'm like, I couldn't believe that, you know, when the houses in my neighborhood were at $500,000 so quickly, to be honest with you, and they've almost doubled that now.
Right.
And I think the low interest rates drove a little bit of that. Some of the migration drove a little bit of that. But we're seeing this kind of, you know, value growth even in the Midwest, you know, in Cincinnati where I grew up. But it's not clear to me how that's going to get checked other than once we, you know, kind of take the kinks out of the supply chain and maybe get the talent, the construction talent back online that kind of went, you know, well, actually this construction talent stayed busy during the pandemic, but once we can get production back in, I think that's okay. But for Miami, I think there is this migration, and that we've seen constant migration before. We've even seen phases where we have heavier migration from different places, whether it's Brazil or, you know, wherever in South America. And we've always seen it from, you know, kind of the snow states, I'll call them, the northern places, and people wanting to come down here to a degree. But what we're seeing now, I think, is a Miami that has finally gotten out of its teen years and is poised to become a true global city. And I think that's part of what is driving the movement of companies and CEOs and talent here from other parts of the US. And it's also what's driving wealth and even business interests from other parts of the world, including and primarily South America, probably at this point. But I think the Europeans have been sneaking in here more than people want to admit as well, right?
Sure.
And so it's coming into its own as a global city. And so I don't necessarily think that we're going to see a bubble because the economy is finally diversifying.
Right. I've thought the same thing, that as the economy cools down and you start seeing, and we're seeing in some of the national estimates and predictions on, you know, what's going to happen with housing or what's going to happen with construction and just different things as it cools down. I think that's where Miami diverges also, and maybe even within the state, because you're right. I think it is kind of growing into its own, and there are so many drivers of investment here that just don't exist in the rest of the US, except in a very limited number of markets. And two of those being New York and Chicago, which are driving it here.
Right.
And so, you know, and then you add in the capital coming from Latin America. And one thing I've been interested in understanding better is a lot of that capital is contributing to the prices in Miami. And, you know, I told you that we hosted a friend last week up from Chile looking for, you know, moving assets, you know, into a more secure place prior to the new constitution that's going to be voted on in September. You know, in Colombia and Brazil, and
Colombia are doing the same thing.
And it's funny, the Real Deal had a post up, the real estate website had a post up the other day that had a picture of Miami, and it had a headline that said, this was a couple of weeks ago, like the week after the election, and it's a beautiful, you know, convention bureau type image of Miami. And it said, you know, the conversation around every dinner table in Colombia right now is Plan B. And then it said, Plan B is Miami. And it got me thinking, as we work in other places, whether we're working over in Bradenton and over on the West Coast, or even up in Martin County, you're up in Central Florida, is with all of this investment coming from the South, looking to park their money. And we have a friend whose home was bought by a couple from Argentina who've only, you know, they bought it and they had a party there for New Year's and they haven't been back to it. You know, it's just sitting there, but it's a safe place for that money. Right. But how, as we're helping communities outside of Miami, how can you get some of this money? Miami's so comfortable and it's so familiar that it's how much of that investment from South America is actually getting past the Miami-Dade line versus happening here. And so I think about our other clients and opportunities to attract some of this investment into places besides Miami. There's so much going on here and it is driving those prices. There's definitely the value compared to Miami, at least in some of these other places, but there's just not that familiarity.
Well, there's a question of familiarity. But I would say there's even a question of being proximate enough to that familiarity, right? Where, you know, being in Miami feels like I haven't left my country to a lot of folks, right? But we're also talking about one percenters, right? And there's only so many places that are really, truly places they want to be. And so throughout Florida, there are pockets of this. Right. And, you know, as that capital comes, yes, some of it will go into real estate, but that's a limited play. Sure. Right. It was part of the reason I asked the question about EB-5s when we were talking to folks in Martin County. Right. Because I think there's likely to be more EB-5 visa investments that are going to come soon. So the question is, what are those enterprises? Where do they want to be? How are they going to attract the talent? Where do the CEOs want to live? And if, you know, and the prices in Miami and in South Florida, Miami, Broward to a lesser degree, but Miami certainly, and even West Palm, I mean, not everybody wants to spend that kind of money when this may even feel like a temporary play to them, right? So, you know, the back and forth of the politics in South American countries most of the time goes back and forth. In the case of Venezuela, it didn't go back yet. Probably will. In case of Cuba, it didn't go back yet. Probably will at some point in time. But for a lot of these wealthy families, this is in some ways a temporary move, right? And so how do they make sure that they're doing what they need to, but it's still not seen as the ultimate long-term investment? I don't know. I mean, I think so they don't want to plop down. The point I was trying to make is they don't want to plop down $20 million on a residence here. They're fine with three.
Right.
Right. And so in Miami, it's getting to the point where you can't find what they need or what they want for three. But other parts of Florida that are proximate, you can find it still. And so I think we're going to see them start to fan out a little bit.
So thanks for joining us today. Please make sure and join us as we wrap up in our next episode, this conversation with Ken Stapleton. But we'll continue to talk about Miami. We'll talk about how Miami is relevant to other places that are starting to experience growth. We'll continue to talk about Latin America. And then we're going to really get into the places we like to work and the places we spend our time working on the ground, getting our hands dirty in economic development. We're going to talk about downtowns. We're going to talk about those signature streets and connecting people to place. And we'll talk a little bit about implementation of a revitalization and redevelopment based on some of Ken's experiences in other states and then a little bit about here in Florida. So thanks for joining us as always, and we'll see you next time. Be flare or be square. Thank you for tuning in to Flareheads. This podcast is dedicated to the entrepreneurs and the small business owners who toil every day to build and grow their dream, and also to those public officials that understand the perspective of those dreamers and who actively support them, understanding the positive impact they have on their community's quality of life. The Flareheads podcast is hosted and executive produced by myself, Kevin Crowder, alongside executive producer and senior editor, Julian Duque, and it is a production of the Business Flare Publishing Group. Please connect with us on all social media. You will find us there as Business Flare, and you can download our ebook, Governing for Economic Development, from Amazon in English and Spanish. The theme song is Surf Rat, an original composition performed by Miami's heavy metal band McFisty and written by Kevin Crowder and the rest of the band. And a special thanks goes out to our tribe of Flareheads, our team, our clients, our friends, our partners, our family, and the rest of Flarehead Nation for your support and inspiration. Please join us again. Thank you.